Silly Conversations, the podcast. Your host, Denzel Mills.
Let's do the little formal introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting people, podcasting world. Today, I'm back. The last two podcasts, we were in Saudi Arabia and the UK. But now we're back at home with somebody who I think you might find interesting. Interesting because she talks about, or she studies, and she can give us a little insight into those things about aches and pains in our bodies. And also she has other interests, which I think are also quite interesting. For your little excitement, we have Pilar. And Pilar will introduce herself, and then we'll get into it as always. So Pilar, first of all, thank you very, very much for your time, because I know you are a busy woman. busy woman. So thank you for your time. And tell the podcasting world what you do, who you are, and why you do it.
Well, first of all, thank you, Denzel, because I know that this podcast is very exquisite with the people who invite to. So I'm flattered I'm here with you.
Exquisite? I like that word. Welcome to the welcome to the exquisite podcast.
I mean it. You already define myself as a very complicated person, and I think I am.
I didn't say complicated. I said a person who does many things.
Some kind of enigmatic, I think. I am a physiotherapist. I am currently working as an anatomy teacher at the University of Valencia. So my main subject is human anatomy. This interest of mine, I combine it with artistic. I like sculpture, painting, and so on. And I also like philosophy. I am studying philosophy online.
And so, podcasting people, these are the things she does on a Monday, Wednesday, and a Friday. You want to hear what she does on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But let's start with the first thing, okay? A physiotherapist and a specialist, and you like to study anatomy, if I've got this correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First of all, why? Why physio? Why? How did you get into this? Was it something because you were a sports person? Was it just you had a fetish for bodies? Why? What was the reason?
I was always very interested in humans, in how to cure, how to know about people, how to help them. So my kind of thing was always the health sciences. Physiotherapist was the profession. I think I had more autonomy to do whatever I thought it was correct. That's one of the reasons I'm not working in a hospital. I like to work with my patients with the time I think they need it, the time my patients need to in order to become better.
There's two things. So there's one, you are also teaching at the university.
Yeah.
And you also have a practice where you're actually dealing with regular people like me who have aches and pains.
Yes.
Okay, so what is it about the idea of anatomy? Because I suppose at the university you're teaching parts of... Actually, it'd be a better question. Can you just tell me, what do you teach to your students at the university?
Yeah, of course. The most of my students are from the first course of their degrees, mostly medicine and physiotherapy degrees. My subject is anatomy, musculoskeletal anatomy. What we have in other muscles, bones, joints, and so on, and how these components function in order to move our bodies. So this is the musculoskeletal part. We have also veins, artery, vessels, things like that.
So we've seen each other once physically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you this question. did you kind of look at me and think, oh, he's got a bit of a problem here. There's a muscle problem here. The balance or the form of his body is showing indicators that he's got, I don't know, something wrong with him. Well, come on. You can tell me the truth. Come on.
Yeah, I will. Not all the time. And not only on the physical way. Nah, but you are a very healthy person, I have to say. And you're taller.
You hear this podcasting world? Podcasting world, I'm a healthy person. So I don't need to be going to the gym that often. Woman tells me I'm healthy. But the question is, though, do people take the whole idea, I don't know, from the medical world? Because I think I understand there's a little bit of a difference between the people who are doctors, and they don't really, I think, maybe I'm exaggerating or inventing things, but maybe things like physiotherapy, etc., maybe they don't give it the same reverence, that's degree of interest for other people, the degree of interest or respect as maybe other medical professions. Do you find that, or am I incorrect in my thinking?
This is a very interesting question, and I have to say I think it's some cultural thing. Previously, we had this sensation of being treated inferiorly than our colleagues who are doctors because they studied medicine. But actually, in nowadays, the feeling is different. Physiotherapists work very hard to be recognized in the society. And I think this hardworking performance has been very clear, has been, I don't know how to say it, but it feels like people really recognize what physiotherapy is, how a physiotherapist can help you in order to feel better. And my patients come to me without asking his or her doctor what is happening with their bodies.
So when somebody comes to you, because obviously people like me, we don't have an idea. We just kind of turn up. And you are, if I remember correctly, you are a specialist in lower back pain. So you're not just a generic physiotherapist. You also have a specialism, I think, which is part of your studies.
Yes, actually, because you said I study philosophy and do my clinical practice 3 times a week. The rest of the time, I do my PhD in low back pain. So I'm kind of specialized in this condition. But I...
And why...
Sorry. No, I like to say we have lots of specialists to study. We can be very specialized in neurological conditions, in pediatry, also cardiorespiratory conditions. If I have to choose one, I'm from the musculoskeletal field. I like this.
You see that word, how it rolls off her tongue. Was it musculoskeletal field?
Yes.
Well, I'm virtually nearly there as a physiotherapist because I can say the words quite nicely. Musculoskeletal field or investigation. As I was going to say, people like me, we kind of turn up, we go to the physio and we say, I've got a pain and it's in my back. I've got a pain, you know, my shoulder, my hands, etc. What's the kind of process to get a better understanding? Because I can't come and say the technical terms, etc. So if I came to you, and it's the first consultancy. And I mean, apart from saying, oh, what a super fine body you have, sir. if you were then to kind of sit me down and take me through a process, or give me an example of the kind of questions you would ask to try and get a clearer diagnosis of my problem.
It depends on what you have to tell us, actually. Because the first question we always... ask you is, tell me your story. Why are you here? Why are you here this afternoon, which when you could be having beers or something, but you're on the physio, so Tell me.
Yeah, well, here. Well, my story would be I'm here because I have no friends to have beers with.
we can solve that too. I mean, if you need it, your physio will have beers with you if that's what you need.
The universal physiotherapist, people. I'm telling you, when she finishes her PhD, if you do not go to this woman and her consultancies, or she may actually work specialist and just go to specific clients like myself, but this will be the woman to go to. So you go and you ask them to tell them a story, but this story would be what, from the start of this pain or the origin of their activities, etc.
Yeah, everything. When the pain started, how it evolves in time, what kind of pain do you feel? If it's located in some area or it is referred to another part of your body, these kind of things. So this is the anamnesis or the subjective anamnesis, the subjective exploration. Later we have more specific explorations, physical exploration and things like that.
So this is a skill, I suppose. You have to do a kind of lot of listening or be very good at listening skills and then interpreting what a common person like myself would say into a diagnostic process, yeah? Because I wouldn't have the vocabulary. This listening skills or this listening ability, does it transfer to your general day-to-day life as well?
Yeah. Actually, I think the very better clinicians I've already known, I think they had always had this kind of skills in their lives. They just professionalism these skills and earn money with them. But
professional listeners.
During all their lives, this is some kind of art with the human treatment, you know, that we have in ourselves, in our way to be, in our way to treat people. So,
okay. So then one of the things here is, like you said, your specialist or your PhD, your doctorate is specializing in lower back pain.
Yeah.
Before we go on to that, because I also know at the moment you are doing some... I'm going to get it wrong for sure because I just kind of call it like electrodes and electrocuting people, which she doesn't do. She doesn't do. Okay. I don't know the term, but you're doing actually something with specifically for women who have very severe or severe period pains. Yes.
Yes.
So, and this is where the electrode comes in and the lower back pain. So, tell me, forget the podcasting world. There's only about 7 people who listen anyway regularly. And I need to thank those 7 people who listen very regularly because it's very appreciated. Tell us a little bit about this study you're doing.
Okay, so my PhD is on the in the universe of biomechanics. Studies in biomechanics try to give an insight of how our muscles, our body moves. So we study 2 things, electromyography, which is the activity of our muscles while we are moving, and movement sensors, which help us to know the quality of the movement, range of motion, how it moves, and so on. The thing with low back pain is that it's very unspecific. Most of the people who suffer from low back pain are diagnosed with non-specific low back pain, which actually says nothing about the prognosis, the treatment, and things like that. It's like saying nothing to our patients. So
right.
The biomechanical studies try to diagnose better these kind of patients, in order to know how treatment could help them, if they need manual therapy, physical therapy, exercise, medication.
Did you say manual Therapy.
Yeah.
So this would be, I suppose, physically adjusting or physically, I don't know, manipulating the muscles around the area.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Manual therapy is a great universe in physiotherapy and other professions, but it's like the most traditional way to treat ourselves. It's very human, very contact thing, you know. The exercise and education and other kinds of physical therapy are another instruments we have in our bag.
And do you think people follow? I mean, it's for our own benefit and it's for our own health. And I joke and I say, oh, I don't really need to go to the gym, or I should go to the gym more often, but I've got a million things to do, so I never go to the gym. So as a physio, you've got your patients, and then you ask them to do certain activities at home to reinforce the work that you're doing. How or what percentage would you say that people actually do that extra work? I mean, if they're sports people, they will do that. But the common, I've used the word twice calling myself common, the everyday, not common, the everyday person like me, what percentage would you say follow strictly the advice and guidance of a physio, especially with lower back pain?
I have to give you a percentage here.
Yeah, in your mind, what you think could be the percentage that people actually do go home and follow your guidance, well, yours and other physios' guidance?
I would like to believe 50-50%, but I'm not entirely sure. You know, when people have chronic low back pain, which is very disabling and very painful, to convince them that they have to do exercise is very tricky sometimes. So the adherence here is more human and more artistic than maybe the clinician or the profession thing. So this is the thing I like most of my job, this human thing about, you know.
Remember what I said to earlier? I said about the idea that you're doing some work with women who have period pain.
Sorry.
and this is connected to the lower back pain, or is it more the biomechanics, the muscular thing, which is
no
for the period pain as well?
Women are the most important part of the population who suffer low back pain. But traditionally, because they are women and they are complicated of, I don't know why, but they have not been studied in science. So everything we know about low back pain in our current knowledge is just about men.
Okay.
Hearing if actually women have three periods of their lives when low back pain is very present. First of all, when they began with their menstrual periods, the low back area is one of the parts of the body when the pain is referred when they have their menstrual.
Yeah, menstrual cycle. Yeah.
Later on pregnancy, low back pain is very
in pregnancy.
So later in pregnancy. This is a very important condition, very disabling too. And later in menopause, the fractures of our vertebra is a very preoccupying condition too. Very disabling, very, very painful. So
and so you said it's something that hasn't been studied. Is it just because science generally has always been considered the kind of the male arena, and like you said, women have kind of been, especially in this, what you're talking about, period pain and the effect on the lower back. Is it something that has just been not dismissed, but ignored? That's the word I'm looking for. An area of study that just has been ignored because maybe the majority of people who have been studying or the few people who study lower back pain specifically are men, and therefore they kind of dismiss women or the needs of women or the study of women in this area. What's your opinion on this? Go on.
Well, I think it's a very complex thing to talk to because there are lots of factors that influence the lack of knowledge on women. But period pain, especially, has been always ignored or dismissed. We can talk about dismissing things here. For a cultural thing, in some countries nowadays, it is impossible to talk about period things. Just imagine to talking about women suffering from period things. Here in Europe, we are trying to compensate historically this lack of knowledge. Especially my PhD is trying to give women some instruments to defend themselves about.
And is it easy to find? Are you finding enough studies and relevant studies about this for your PhD, or is it? You have to look hard to find quality reference material.
It's been very demanding because from time to time, I just found just hypotheses about this. But anything about basic science to build something structured about how women have pain, low back pain especially, but pain during their period cycle. They are just some hypotheses and treatment, but treatment without knowing what is actually happening in our body.
Right, right. And so at the moment, because you said there was the three, I can say, main periods, start of periods for women. So this would be like the kind of younger teenage years or whatever. Then you talked about the pregnancy, which I suppose people who've had babies, I haven't. But people who have had babies know about this anyway. And then menopause. So are you trying to cover your I was going to say experiments. You don't experiment on people. She doesn't experiment on people. It's kind of like investigate. Experiment sounds like really weird, you see. Her studies, that's a better word. So are your studies kind of looking at the range of people, or are you focusing on a particular group?
In my PhD, I'm focusing in people with dysmenorrhea, which is pain during their menstrual cycle. It's the first step.
Right.
Another colleagues of mine, which are from the same group of investigation, are focusing in different fields. The next experimentation, the next project we are going to perform is pain during pregnancy, actually.
Right. But for your finishing of your PhD, you're just going to focus on this part of the period pain, or you need the other three sections, the pregnancy and menopause, to finish your studies?
For my HOF, and the half of my manuscript thesis, I'm going to focus just on dysmenorrhea. It's enough.
Right.
Believe me, it's enough.
And the age group of people, do you accept the people who are in your study group? Is it a wide age range, or have you limited the age range as well?
I limited it from 18 years old, the majority of. Because I need them to sign the ethical statements, the agreement of participation. So
So you
to be adults.
You need them to sign their life away just in case you decide to remove their back.
Absolutely, yeah, because it's very dangerous what we do in our labs.
So you start from 18 to what's your upper age?
45 is the older woman I accepted. Older.
Oh, so you have a nice age range,
yeah.
A nice range of people. The women, I was going to say the people, the women who are participating in this, are they women who have had very severe problems, or is it kind of a range? Ones who just normally, who want to participate, and then you have some who are very severe pain and lower back pain? What's the makeup? That's it. Let me just ask the question again. Pilar, tell me, what's the makeup of the women who come for the studies, for the trials?
We have a range of severity of the pain, mm-hmm. which is actually a variable we are measuring, we are considering. But I can tell you, women who came in their period, in their period days, they are in pain. They have severe pain.
But this is my last question about this, and we'll go on to other things. If they're in severe pain and you're doing studies, in that moment, do they have to, I'm going to use this word, God, I sound so semi-intelligent sometimes. Do they have to refrain? Refrain, basically stop. Do they have to stop taking any kind of painkillers or anything for you to get a better accurate reading of their muscle functioning?
We don't strongly recommend them to stop taking their medications because we mm-hmm. do functional tasks. We do exercise here. So it's important for us and for them to feel comfortable with the
right.
with the environment, with the investigation environment. Even if they have painkillers, we found changes in their musculoskeletal function, in their musculoskeletal conditions. So it's not a problem because if pain is severe and is established as a chronic low back pain in this case, changes in our bodies occurred even if we are taking medication.
Well, that's all right then, because I like taking medication.
I have to say, our women are very resilient, and neither of them take strong painkillers to come here. Because I didn't tell them anything. I actually told them to have their medication and things like that. But they voluntarily stopped taking their meds. It lets you have better results in our thesis. So
okay.
I have to really thankful them for their, I don't know how to say it, for their voluntary decision.
For their efforts, for their comprehension, all those kind of things. Okay. So that's part of the work you're doing, and hopefully you'll get your results and start writing up and get your PhD done relatively soon, because we had a small agreement. Not that I'm doing anything to do with her PhD, but we did have a small agreement about something we were working on, and she finished that. And so she can focus on her PhD and finishing that. But this woman doesn't only do these things, because she sounds very serious, and I think she's a little bit, you know, nervous. But this woman also does many other things. For example, she's an archer. She does archery, you know, like Robin Hood. Well, not like Robin Hood. She doesn't do any stealing. How did you get into the world of archery, my friend?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I do stealing or not.
Well, you could try.
I would like to, but I don't.
Well, I mean, probably on a Balanbithi, you know, with a bow and arrow across your back, and then stopping somebody and saying, "Give me all your cash, or I'll shoot you with an arrow."
Nowadays, it's not very intimidating, I have to say.
I mean, they may just give you because the pair of balls that you have to actually say that and do it. So that could be the other option. But anyway, how did you get into the whole world of archery?
I think I loved archery most of my life. I imagined myself, since I was a child, as an anachronic person, actually. I rode horses also, and I was thinking, I need a bow here because it's the component I'm lacking to the arena.
So you were thinking of yourself as the old Genghis Khan horseback riders?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Wow. All right. And, first of all, how long have you been doing archery?
I think I've been practicing archery for 6 years now. For 6 years, yeah. Before the pandemic.
Practicing or doing?
Before the pandemic situation, which seems great.
Practicing or doing?
Doing. doing my archery things. I'm practicing my shoots.
So tell us a little bit about the world of archery. Do you have one of these high-tech, I suppose it's carbon fiber, composite bows?
There are three different kinds of bows. We have these very complicated bows, the composite bows. We have the this bow, which is just the arrow and the main body, which is very Robin Hood situation, you know. And later we have the Olympic archer, the Olympic archer.
Yes, I've seen those, and they're kind of like bow, and they've got like little tentacle things coming out of them at different angles, and they look like a small antenna. Do you use one of those?
Yes, my bow is the Olympic archer, the Olympic bow. Wow. This is my modality, yeah.
And how much does it weigh, the bow, the weight of the bow itself?
I've never known the height, actually, but it's heavy, yeah.
Ah, yeah.
It's heavy because you have to. It's very demanding the act of doing archery, because you have to have your arm steady during all the morning shooting arrows, with the perfection of doing it always in the same way.
And so what, the bow could be about what, a kilo and a half, or something like that. Ah, yes.
Yeah, three.
Okay.
3 kilos.
Okay.
But I've never asked for the height of my bow.
But then also in terms of the measurement, because you're tall.
Yeah.
Not as tall as me, of course, podcasting people, but she's relatively tall. So do you have a bow, because it's an Olympic bow, is it in function of your height, or the Olympic bows have a standard measurement, and everybody, regardless of height, has to use this type of measurement?
No, they are chosen for the height, our length, and actually our arm length, because we can be tall, but our arms could be longer or shorter.
So, yes, people. Pilar's got an arm span. You know, if you've ever seen pictures of some of the American basketball players, you know, Michael Jordan and people like that, and they've got this very large or very long arm span. Pilar is similar. Similar to the arm span of Michael Jordan. I'm telling you.
Actually,
depending
on the length of our arms, we can shoot in longer distances.
So your arm span can help you dictate how far you can actually shoot the arrow, I think. It would be the correct term.
We have less effort.
Okay.
Because if you have shortened arms, you need more potential in your bow, which makes difficult to open the bow. So because my arms are super long, my bow can shoot longer distances with my arms opening in the full range.
Right.
So
the other thing is it more about technique? I mean, there's got to be some strength there, but is it more about, I suppose, this is very interesting because of the work you do. So is it about, it's more a combination of technique and strength rather than just physical strength, because you don't have muscles like the Hulk.
Yes. Is it a combination between technique, which is, I think, the most important part, as you already said, strength, especially back strength, our muscles in our back and our shoulder, very, very training.
Well trained, yes.
Well trained. We need a third aspect here, which is the resistance.
What do you mean the resistance?
Archery is kind of an aerobic sport. Not a strength sport, but an aerobic sport. Because you have to be, 5 hours without stopping, shooting arrows. So being tired mentally and physically is the main complication in our sport.
So So 5 hours standing. I don't see you as a person who does any gym work. You don't look like a person who does gym work. Do you? I know you go around using a bike. You move around a lot by bike. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, I don't know, maintaining your general physical, do you actually do gym work?
You see, I get bored very easily in gym because I don't have an objective there. Yes, moving weights to put them on the same side they were, it's like, it's not very motivating for me.
You understand me perfectly, perfectly. But do you have to do some, or you find a different way to kind of get this stamina and these, obviously, some kind of strength in the muscles? Is it something, do you do some gym work, or at the moment you just, it's just a natural thing because you've got a young body?
I think it's, the main component here is I'm very young and my body is very grateful. I think my body forgives me for not being very, very conscious about the exercise it needs. But you see, I have my daily routine in my house because I know how to perform. I know how to exercise my body. So I do exercise with my back, with my arms, with my shoulder, with my legs. So I train my patients too, and I use my moments in my work mm-hmm. to exercise myself too, to do some exercises I will enjoy.
Well, I just hope you're not moving somebody's pelvis or their legs as if you're pinging the string on the artery thing, you know? You know, you're just putting somebody's leg all the way out, you know, in the socket, and they're going, yeah, yeah, vale, and you're just, no, just a little bit more, just a little bit more, and then you just let it go and it just shoots back into place. I hope you're not doing that.
The point is here, time is very precious. And if I need to move parts of alien bodies to parts of the body which are not mine, well, this is some kind of exercise in the gym, but in my clinic.
Well, people, I'm not trying to take away business from this woman because she's very good. I'm sure she's very good. However, just when you go to her physio sessions, and if she needs to do some manipulation on your legs or maybe your shoulders, your arms, and do a little bit of stretching, just be prepared that she may overextend. And it's not because she's going to kind of cause you pain. She's just overextending because she thinks she's in an archery competition and she's taking advantage of your tendons and connective tissue just to stretch them out a bit for her own benefit, but also your benefit.
It's a win-win.
And that's why I haven't been to her as a physio as yet. I think my leg will come off in your hand. I'm sure you start moving my hip bone and the hip joint, I think it will just come out of its socket and come off in your hand.
You have very long legs and arms, so this will be a good performance treating you. I mean,
yes. Well, I'm working on that. We'll get there. We'll get there one day and you can practice. But at least now, having had this conversation with you, I'll be aware of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I can just go twang.
That's true. You already know what I'm doing here. Yeah.
So the other thing is, my friend, because again, it just never stops. You also, and she's shown me some of her super paintings, and you do paintings and you do sculptures, mm-hmm. okay? And this is the other days when she's not doing Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Sorry, Fridays. This is the Tuesday and Thursdays, okay? She's a very good artist, to be quite honest. So you have these paintings, and I think it's like acrylics or pencil drawings, and you also do sculptures. So how did this, again, artistic side of things kind of come about? Was it just something you found yourself that you were very good at? Is it something you use to disconnect at the end of the day, at the end of the week or something? The artist in you, tell me about it.
About your question of when or how it born this kind of thing of me, I cannot imagine my life without painting. I think since I'm conscious of myself, I had paintings or some kind of pencil in my hand in order to represent or imagine things that comes to my mind. So during all my life, I've been painting and drawing. So this is talking about me, you know.
But your paintings and drawings, and even the sculptures which I've seen, are very much related to your studies, your work, your profession.
Yeah.
If I give you a little example, maybe she will draw a person or a figure, and they're doing some kind of pose or some kind of action. But then, I don't know if I should tell them because they need to see it. I can edit this out. But then what she would do is actually show a part of the shoulder or the leg or something and show the muscle structure, you know? So it's like if it was revealed and show part of the muscle structure. So you kind of see the body of the person doing the action or the form, taking the form, and then a layer removed, that skin layer removed, to show the kind of muscle connective tissue. She'll show the connective tissue.
Very nice word there.
Thank you very much. And I'm actually going to say the muscular connective tissue, and it's exposed in the actual painting or drawing. And she does this, I think, in everything you've done, I think, yes? Maybe there's one I've seen that you haven't done it.
This is a very concrete collection. I'm not only doing these kind of things. I also like superheroes, people moving.
Like me?
Like you, yeah, sure.
Everyone
is kind of a superhero for the
English speaking learning people.
You are.
I am that superhero.
I can relate that. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's only seven because they listen to the podcast. Well, there's only seven, but I am their superhero.
But talking about the anatomical collection, I can assume this is a very awesome thing to see, you know. And this is my objective, actually. This is my aim, to show the artistic things on anatomy. Anatomy and learning anatomy and explaining, showing, teaching anatomy is my life.
It's your thing. Mm-hmm. So just imagine, because I've, like I said, she has some very nice work. Imagine a hospital or somebody says, we want to buy your collection, the anatomy collection, and we're going to pay you a disgusting amount of money to have this collection. What would you do? We're going to assume that you're going to finish your PhD first, obviously. So then what would you do? Would you take this money, travel around the world? What would you do with this disgusting amount of money?
Because you already assume I will sell my artistic collection. Did you?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask my opinion.
I will do that, yeah.
Exactly. If you ask my opinion about this, you say, Denz, listen. Somebody's offered me a disgusting amount of money for my artistic collection. What do you think? I'd say sell it, baby. Sell it. Sell it all.
Yeah, I will. Actually, my artistic collections, I've never thought about selling them because they're very part of me. They're very intimate. But I really enjoy the process of doing them, of painting or sculpture or things like that. When I finished, I don't know what to do with them. So yeah, I will sell them. And what I will do with that disgusting amount of money.
Exactly, disgusting amount of money. But would you continue being a physio, or would you then focus more in the world of art? Because somebody says, we think you are that good, or your work is that good, that we want to pay disgusting amounts of money. So would you then change and then probably try to make a life as an artist?
I think I wouldn't change a thing, because I really enjoy the life I have, combining the education, anatomy education, how teaching in the university, my practice as a physio with my patients, doing archery and doing my babies. I think this is the life I want to live. I will buy an enormous and a precious house and a huge castle or something like that. But I wouldn't change a thing. I'm happy as I am.
I wouldn't change a thing, but I will buy a huge house and a castle.
Yeah.
That's not changing.
I will change where I live, but not how I live.
Right. Okay. Okay. So you'd still buy me that martini we were talking about.
Absolutely.
Yes?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. At least that's more important. Maybe you could buy me two martini.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe three.
Okay, that's nice. So then your English language skills, because you're cool, you're good. Because at the moment, have you done any presentations about biomechanics in English?
Yeah, in Prague.
Ah, yeah.
Last week in Prague.
In where, sorry?
Prague.
Prague. Prague.
Sorry.
Oh, no, sorry, Prague. In Prague, yeah?
Mm-hmm. In Prague last year. Yeah, this was my last presentation in English.
And do you have any conferences or things that are coming up where you may be participating in English, or it's a general congress or something in English? I don't know, we're halfway through 2025, so I don't know if you've got anything coming up for the second half of this year or any plans for 2026.
Yeah, sure. I will present my results, my PhD results, I hope next year. I don't know if international, but I already have a schedule. A national congress, but this is in Spanish.
But are you going to present your PhD in English or in Spanish?
Because they are national congresses for now in Spanish, and my presentation is going to be in Spanish. But the results in international congresses, they will be in English. And not for the 2025 course, the next year, but maybe on 2026, I will do my classes, my anatomical classes in English.
Okay. So first of all, most important thing, on 2026 or in 2026?
Yes.
Very good. And the second thing is, you know, you can always call on me to help you with these kind of things, because I just think it's very interesting. And it also helps me learn in this sense if you do that. In terms of presenting your classes, not being in your class for you to manipulate like a bow and arrow. Okay. For you, what's been the interesting thing about the language, learning the language? Do you also, you speak Valenciano, you speak Spanish, and you speak English. Do you speak any other languages?
I know a little bit of Italian.
Okay. Well, I know Italian, it's just this. And for those people on the podcast, you can't see, but anyway,
I know a little bit of Latin, because when we
Latin,
yeah, because
because of the body,
exactly,
names.
When we explain anatomy, we don't have English or British words for the anatomical structures. They are in Latin. They're in Latin.
Because it's Latin, kind of like Latin and Greek, normally in this medical world and things like that.
Mostly Latin, okay. But
this could be potentially something you'll have more opportunities to use English in the future. You'll always have my help, or I'll be always around help. I don't know how helpful I am, but anyway, you can pass the things by me. You can practice with me. Whether I'm helpful, I'm not too sure. But hopefully, you can get to do this in 2026. So, Pilar, the artist, the sculpturist. Is that a word, sculpturist?
Exactly.
Sculptor. Another sculptor, sculpturist. It's a new word now. Pilar, the sculpturist, the artist. I'm going to say the anatomist, but that's not a word.
Is
that a word?
It is. Anatomist. And it's a very beautiful word. Yeah.
My God, I invent things and they work. So for you, and obviously we know that the next step is actually getting your PhD done. Do you have any other competitions in the archery thing coming up? Will we be seeing you in Los Angeles, maybe in 2028, I think?
I'm not that good, but I have time. So maybe in 2028, I will evolve.
Well, listen, if you are going to be in the Olympic Games in 2028, I volunteer myself to be your archery carrier. I don't know what an archery carrier or your arrows. I was going to say sticks. I'll be your arrows carrier. And I don't know if you need them to be wiped with a nice cloth so they go through the air with super precision, but I will be available for that. Okay.
So we will talk about business sooner or later, aren't we?
I would never even charge you to be your assistant, your archery assistant. And also, it would be in gratitude of you kind of giving me an understanding of hip and lower back pain. So I'll do it for free. I mean, you just need to pay for the flight for me to go to Los Angeles and obviously the 5-star hotel. But the actual carrying of arrows and the bow, for free, my friend, for free.
Okay.
that doesn't excite you at all, does it?
You know me to solve your low back pain for free, to carry my arrows.
No, not for free. Listen, I'll pay my ways, but as a show of appreciation that you help me understand what's actually happening, I will carry your arrows for free. The travel and the 5-star hotel and the caviar for breakfast, obviously, you will be paying for that.
That's the universe. When I have planned a lot of money, you have an insane amount of money.
I like this insane amount.
Insane,
yes.
Yeah. I don't know why I said it wrong, but an insane amount of money, because I sold my paintings to hospitals and things like that. Isn't it? Is this universe?
Exactly. And if I manage to get anybody of a higher financial standing, the man who owns Amazon, CEOs of Google or Microsoft or Inditex or anybody like this on this podcast, and there is a possibility because most of them speak English, I just need a few hundred million more subscribers to get out there. But if I do manage to get those people, I will definitely send them your way to have a look at some of your artwork. Pilar?
Let me know.
I will let you know. Thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you very, very much for your information. And people, you may say, she's very good, very serious, very formal. She's not. I mean, not that she's not very good. She's very good. She's a bit more, how can I say, bubbly, energetic, etc. Maybe because she's got to do some work later and she's in a professional mode.
I am more content also, here.
Sorry?
I am more content because I would like to show them I am professional.
Exactly. And also being on this, what we can probably consider one of the greatest podcasts, which has yet to be discovered by people. She's also given me this level of professionality that maybe this podcast lacks at some point. My friend, I really appreciate your time, really appreciate what you've told us a little bit about. Maybe at some stage in the future, we can talk about when you've done your PhD. So don't leave it too long. Get your act together, you know. And we can see what happens in the future. And also, when I go to see you, I can then relate my experience of what it was like to be, I want to say electrocuted, but it's not electrocuted, but to have sensors on my body and see how what's happening with my muscles and things like this and get some feedback from this fantastic woman. So you can finish talking to the podcasting world, and I keep saying podcasting world. There's only about 10. No, but I was just saying, you know, talk to the podcasting world, say goodbye to the podcasting world, and anything else you would like to say.
I think, first of all, I would like to thank you, Denzel, for the invitation. I really, really appreciate being here with you, talking with you, but this is not nothing original because it's always a pleasure talking with you.
That is true.
And I, as you already said, I hope we can talk in this form together sooner or later, because I finished my PhD or because I electrocute your body to study your muscles, or maybe because I became rich.
Well, if you become rich, if you become rich, you're going to have a very, very, very good friend in me. Extremely good friend in me.
You see, I'm present here for both of us.
Well, yes. But yeah, I really do think, you know, your artwork side of things, there's a lot of potential there. And I don't know how it works in this whole world of getting it out there, people seeing it, etc. But I think you got a lot of talent. And maybe once some of these things kind of fall into place, finishing studies and getting a nice group of clients, maybe you have more time to dedicate after the Olympics, of course.
Yeah, sure.
After the Olympics, dedicate to the art side of things.
I need 3 or 4 lives. Thank you, Benzo. And think.
No. Don't thank you. Thank you. You're the one who, you know, has a more complex life at the moment and more important things to do. So thank you very, very much for your free time. Those people who have enjoyed this, what can I say, moment of ecstasy. Okay, not so much ecstasy. Fun, enjoyment, and information, to be quite honest, good information. So subscribe. Do all the things that you need to do. Press that subscribe button. I don't know where it is, but do it. And just find out some more about what we're going to do here on the whole Silly Conversations kind of thing. So thank you very much, Pilar, for your time. And that's about it, my friend.
Yeah.
The voices and the names have been changed in this podcast to protect the wicked. For any grammar, information, or correction, please ask someone else, not me.